Good morning.
Good morning, Sensei.
As everybody knows, the practice circle this morning is on a chapter entitled Making Peace with Loss, Entering the Tiger's Cave. So that's certainly a chapter that's very alive for me. I'll just read a quote that Bill included when he put out notice for the practice circle. This is Pat O'Hara writing this. When we are with others, we more easily open ourselves to reflection, to the shifting circumstances, to attending to this very moment. Loss is healed when we recognize the world that is still around us, the people and the sounds and smells and colors of our extended self. We can do this with others, opening ourselves to reflection, and to the changing reality of being with others in the loss. So I want to say a few words about loss, about grief, which will probably include sharing some of the emotion that goes along with that. Just a little background. My brother's name was Richard. Most people called him Rich or Richie. And he was 5 years younger than me. So we didn't really have a particularly close relationship growing up. I was a senior in high school, he was in eighth grade, and so forth. You know, so we didn't hang around. Played some as kids when we were younger. But there were a number of other complicating factors. Our mother's name was Margaret, but she was only my brother's mother, which I didn't know growing up. And so there was, she related to him very differently than me. And so this process of this secret and a whole bunch of other stuff, my father came back from the war with PTSD, all of this stuff, I think in general, I won't spend a lot of time with the details of it, but conspired to really create a circumstance where Rich and I were not particularly close. And when I turned 17 and went to college, I never came back. Not that I didn't have contact with my family, but I never lived at home again. And when Rich graduated high school, his mother died, and he remained and lived and took care of our father. So that's sort of the backdrop to our situation. When I got married and had a family, Rich was, and my father were very much involved with that, with my son and his growing up and birthday parties and things that happened at school and all of those kinds of things that most of you are familiar with that families get involved in. So again, I wouldn't say that I was close to my brother, but I saw him a lot. And my brother was a very, very non-disclosing kind of person. He was very enigmatic, very nice, but he really would never talk much about himself, his thoughts or feelings about things, unless I mentioned Rush Limbaugh. We couldn't be more apart politically or sociologically, but that's a story for another day. That didn't really come up that much, didn't really interfere at all with our relationship. So then time passed, and when my son was a senior in high school, I separated from Beth, my wife, and eventually got divorced, and that changed circumstances. So there was no longer sort of a reason to get together. Also, my father died in there as well. And then my brother moved to North Carolina. So we stayed in touch mostly by phone. Occasionally, if he'd be around, we'd go out to dinner. So that was my relationship with him. And he had a very serious heart condition. He was on a transplant list, which was probably a pie in the sky because at age 65, the likelihood of him getting a heart transplant was nil. So last Sunday, Saturday night, I put my phone on the charger downstairs in the kitchen, and I'm now remarried, and put my phone in the kitchen and went to bed and got up Sunday morning and got ready to come to Zen. And when I got in my car, I grabbed my phone. When I got in the car, I realized there was four or five or even six phone calls, all from this number in a 732 area code. My brother lived down the shore in a town called Whiting, which is near Tom's River. And on Friday, my brother, I had talked to him, and interestingly enough, when I talked to him, I said, wow, you sound pretty good. And he said, no, I'm actually miserable. I'm going to the hospital, and he had to have some procedure done anyway, because we had made plans that I will, you know, when you go into the hospital after the procedure and you're out of the anesthesia, call me and I'll come down and we'll hang out, because he had sold his condo in Toms River and was going to move back down to North Carolina where he had lived before. And I had some sort of a feeling that I better see him this time because I may never see him again. So anyway, so that was our plan. You know, he was going to call me on Sunday, let me know if it was okay, and I was going to get down and visit with him. We also had dinner plans, which fell through because he wasn't feeling good. So, like I said, I grabbed my phone last Sunday morning, and I get in my car, and I'm warming up the car, and I look, and it's a message, same message over and over again, different, you know, from the hospital saying that my brother had died that morning. And, it, you know, relating to Pat O'Hara's chapter, it's really amazing the fabric of life, how it gets revealed, all its color and its texture when a connection is broken, in this case, when somebody dies. I would have thought to myself, if I was talking to somebody over dinner, yeah, well, you know, I'll miss Rich when he's gone. But I didn't think there would be much of an impact. He'd been sick for a long time. I wasn't all that close to him to begin with. But when I took this message, when I played this message, I was literally in shock. Now, it's not a state that I'm unfamiliar with, but I was surprised that I was shocked. I was stunned. And I was sort of, didn't really, you know, for a minute or two, had to get my mind together, had to reorganize it. My life had changed significantly. Which, and again, was a surprise to me. So the course of the week was really spent trying to organize things on behalf of my brother. I've talked to so many people that were friends of his, acquaintances of his, a guy that was a driver for him when he couldn't drive, trying to put his life together and find out, because there was no will that I could find, trying to put his life together in a way in which I would think he would be happy, so that I could do, you know, what he wished. He had a dog who was in a kennel, a very difficult dog, very unlikely that the dog can be placed with anybody, and so it went. But the texture and color, the dimension that of my brother's life, even though I didn't really learn much, there were many more questions than answers, I came to feel about him as my brother. Now that sounds crazy, but before he was my brother in name, you know, this person was my brother. I can't say that I had any particular feelings or brotherly feelings toward him until now. And I can't say that I can give any concrete reason why that would be, but there's something about the power of loss, of having your life shifted or turned upside down or crooked, that causes, I don't know, attention to be paid to things that maybe it wasn't paid to before. So I feel there's this fabric that exists about my brother that I was really unaware of before, that arises out of all these conversations and starting to go through his personal affairs. The other thing was, I was sort of driving down, I don't know where, you know, these thoughts come up sometimes without any explanation, but I had a thought that this is going to be creepy because I had to get down and claim his possessions, which would mean there would be a bag with wallet and cell phone, I hoped, and clothes and stuff in it. And to go through this bag, I was, you know, I mean, I was going to do it, but it, and the exact opposite was true. Going through his possessions was actually quite intimate and touching. So again, I had an expectation that reality turned on top of its head. So as I move through this process throughout the week, partly just very disciplined, very determined to try and do what I thought he would want me to do. But out of that loss grew a relationship that hadn't existed before. At the same time, I'm not going to go into details about this, I have been involved in several other very difficult life situations. And I don't remember whether I was talking with somebody or I was just sitting there, and I thought to myself, you know, and this isn't anti-Christian or anything, I'm just sharing the thought. If I believed in God, you know, the typical Christian God that I was raised to believe in when I was growing up, I would be saying something like about, why me? Why is this happening to me? You know, what? And somehow the practice of Zen, I understand that this is just what it is. There's not any cosmic meaning to it. This is what it is. And as best as I can be open to it, it will teach me. But it's not being done to me personally. This is what happens when you're born and you take this form and you live a life. You know, the much overused statement of shit happens. Well, that does. But the question becomes, or that I ask myself, is, okay, so how do I use this? What do I do with this? And so the first answer is, I'm going to do the best I can to do what my brother, who I didn't know very well, what I think he would want me to do. And at the same time, naturally arising out of this activity is grief and all the emotions that go along with it. And the other, another aspect of this is, because my brother is younger than me, and it's a reminder, you know, his passing is a reminder that things are constantly changing. And those changes can be very personal. It's not necessarily a philosophical concept, you know, that we study in Zen, that things are always changing. You know, we live out and are affected by those changes on a daily basis, somewhat, sometimes subtly and sometimes dramatically, sometimes joyfully and sometimes painfully. I don't remember anymore the context for this story. I think it was a Zen context. And I think it was one of the teachers in our lineage was doing the service for somebody who had died. And after conducting the service, he just sat in front of this sangha in silence. And then he asked the question, who will be next? Now for me, that question and my brother's loss is a reminder. Don't waste 1 minute of your life, good or bad. Don't waste it. Oh, I'll stop there. Thank you for listening. This is actually part of my own grief process. By the way, one of the best definitions of grieving that I've ever heard is talking about your loss over and over again until everybody you know is sick of hearing it. Thank you for listening.